and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
But it's something else to watch two men at the highest level battle, and one may be favored over the other, but you never know what's going to happen. And that's why boxing is the way it is.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
He comes on damn near Papito's full steam ahead.
Pedro Fernandez.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million-dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV. Often imitated but never duplicated, 37, make that 38 plus years now of being on top. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your ever so modest host. I'm also a four-time Golden Glove boxing champion and an award-winning boxing writer. So supposedly, allegedly, I know a little bit about boxing. But guess what? The average fan, you probably know more. So I'll give you this opportunity. I'll open up the toll-free phone line here. Give me a call if you'd like, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. A little more popular. People don't like going on the air for some reason with me. The text line number, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. I'm laughing about people not wanting to go on the air because I remember when Colin Seymour did an article on me for the San Jose Mercury News, I guess it was about 25, 30 years ago. He interviewed a bunch of listeners and they said they were scared to call me because if they said something stupid, I would like flush a toilet on them or something like that. Bottom line is, we don't do that anymore. Not really. But if you call up and do something stupid, I guess we will ask you. Bottom line is, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV. We'll hear from Dr. Netan Sethi in this hour of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, talking about the perils of boxing. And, of course, should there be a mandatory retirement age for a professional pugilist or a mixed martial arts fighter? We'll talk with the New York State Athletic Commission's premier doctor, Dr. Netan Sethi, a little bit later in the show. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Tower power to the break!
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council, right here on Sports Byline.
The guitar, the very talented Jeff Tamalier, played with Starship, Tower of Power, Average White Band. Speaking of Tower of Power, Brent Carter, my buddy, of course, he is the lead singer of currently the Average White Band, or AWB, right? He told me he's doing a gig with Tower of Power sometime like in September in Sacramento, California. So they're getting back together. So I guess Tower of Power doesn't have a lead vocalist as we speak. Things happen. They've had like 20 of them in like their 50 years. But the bottom line is I think they were hurting for a lead vocalist and they're bringing back some of the older guys. Of course, him and, Mr. Green now with, I think Ray Green is now with Santana. Santana stole his last lead singer, Tower Power's last lead singer, and Ray Green and took him. Of course, Santana offering the big money compared to Tower Power. Bottom line, let's get off the sport of music and get into the sport of boxing. I want to mention the fact that Andre Ward is not saying whether or not he's going to come back. I don't think he will come back. Of course, I'm talking about the 2004 Olympic gold medalist, undefeated as a light heavyweight and a super middleweight. Of course, broke in, I believe, at about 160 pounds, 162. Had some shaky moments. People thought he had shaky moments as a preliminary fighter. I didn't think so. I just thought he learned how to fight. I mean, just learn how to business, learn the pro game. Bottom line is, of course, he captured the Super Six tournament, Showtime Super Six tournament with all those different fighters, Mikel Kessler. I can go on and on, but the bottom line is he smoked all those guys and he went to 175. And the first fight with Kovalev, a bit shaky, but the second fight, no doubt about who was a better fighter that day. No doubt about it. And of course, he retired afterwards. Now, will he come back for the Canelo payday? That's really the big question. And it's a huge payday. In fact, it's such a significant payday that I can't believe that Caleb Plant is going to price himself out of that type of payday because guess what? Things happen. Last night, how can I put this? An upset of unbelievable proportions took place last night. Of course, guy didn't have a chance, right? Well, Michael Coffey came in like at a 25 or 30 to 1 to favorite, and he got knocked out. happens. 5-6 rounds happens. You know, the fights have to take place. Yeah, fights on paper look like a rout, and I thought this was going to be a rout, no doubt about it. But it was a rout. Just the other way around. Sometimes guys get it together and give Johnny his props. Last night, he shined, no doubt about that. We'll see where he goes from that point forward. As far as Zing Ma is concerned, of course, I think that back. Zing can. Of course, he got stopped for the WBA title last night by Lee Wood, a kid from the UK. He should be arrested for impersonating a fighter. I mean, I've never seen a guy so feeble in my entire life. How did that guy ever win a boxing match? Ever. I mean, ever. I'm serious. Ever. And he was a WBA champion? Says a lot about the WBA, I guess. Anyway, bottom line is Lee Wood is from the UK, and of course the UK is loving having these champions. Of course, they built up their amateur program, unlike the United States. They didn't build their amateur program. They didn't put any money into it. Frank Warren, I think, dumped about 8 or 10 million bucks into the amateur program. Must have been about 10, 12 years ago. Of course, guys like Ricky Burns, and I mean, the current Ben, the former Nigel Benn, but the current Conor Benn, of course, who tested positive for COVID in his fight with Adrian Granados, was called off yesterday, so at the last minute. Bottom line is, guys not, even when guys get vaccinated, I guess you can test positive for COVID, but the bottom line is, you're not gonna die. That's what I'm trying to get across here, is that you're not gonna die. You're not gonna end up in the ICU. You might feel a little bit uncomfortable, but guess what? You're not gonna die. So the vaccine is worth it. You don't wanna die, and you don't wanna give it to people that are, you know, maybe you're in good health, but you can carry this thing around. If you give it to somebody that's not in good health, you've killed them without knowing. You really don't wanna do that, do you? So get vaccinated. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, checking your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Last night, the world of mixed martial arts is not happening as far as the UFC is concerned because of the fact that they really don't have any stars. I mean, if you don't have any stars, we talked about this before, but if you don't have any stars, what can you do? I mean, you can't keep saying, you know, the UFC belt, the UFC title, this and that, because they never highlight the champions. They only highlight the UFC. I mean, the fact that Francis Ngannou is probably the most explosive heavyweight I've ever seen in my life. In my life, as a puncher is concerned. I'm serious. He can put leverage on a punch. He's doing it with 4-ounce gloves, of course, but he can put leverage on a punch that can knock anybody out in boxing, wrestling, mixed martial arts, anybody on the planet. He hits you on that chin, I think you're going. That's how hard he is. I don't think he can be stopped as far as punching power is concerned. Of course, then and at the current time, he's a UFC champion. But, of course, Dana White doesn't want to give him his props, probably doesn't want to give him his money. Guys want to get paid in the UFC. Dana White is against paying guys. I mean, they made $290 million last year. They grossed $290 million. And somebody told me, allegedly, it used to be 8 to 10% of the money went to the UFC fighters. Now it's supposedly up to somewhere around 18%, where the NFL and the NBA is somewhere around 50%. So it needs to go up a lot more. Of course, this is pimping. And that's what I'm trying to say. It's pimping in the most egregious manner. I mean, you can't do much more than turn a guy out. And of course, Dana White's form of matchmaking is, if you turn down a fight, he puts you in a tougher fight the next time. If you turn down a fight, if you're not ready to fight, oh man, you know, I got an injury, this and that. Danny goes, okay, I remember that. You screwed my plans up. So next time, Danny gives it to you and puts you in with a killer. Of course, one or two death fights, death matches after death matches will take their toll on people. And I think by the time guys get built up to the world championship status in the UFC, they're already damaged goods. They're damaged beyond repair. So what I'm trying to tell you is that the longevity is not there. Of course, Stipe Miocic, the former UFC heavyweight champion, he was our longest title holder. I think he defended the title 3 times. That was a record? 3 times? Come on. I think Joe Louis had like 25 defenses. And the bottom line is, it ain't the same because of the fact there's no longevity and they don't want to build guys up to last a long time. They want guys to last, boom, like a firecracker, like a flare. Boom, go off and then done. Go off and then done. Bottom line is they don't want to pay guys to be great. They don't. They just want to pay guys to appear and show up and fill their cards. Of course, their cards aren't super cards anymore. The fact that Conor McGregor got beat a couple of weeks ago, a fortnight ago, actually broke his ankle. And from that type of ankle break, that was one of the ugliest ankle breaks I've ever seen looking at ankle breaks. I don't look at them a lot, but the bottom line is, you know, you sort of like a car accident. You want to look at it a little bit. So you look at, yeah, that was ugly. Anyway, Conor's not coming back from that. If he comes back, it'll be like 2 years down the road before he can really get on it as far as putting weight and training on it and that kind of good stuff. So you figure 2 years from now, he'll be a lot more drunker, a lot more fatter. And guess what? This time, he's not going to be able to dry out and come down. Did he dry out and come down for this last fight? Having alcoholics in my entire family, okay, mother, father, uncles, grandfathers, I'm telling you the truth. You sort of look at people and you sort of they drink. So you sort of it's like the gaydar. You figure somebody's like gay around you, the gaydar goes off. Instead of radar, it's gaydar, right? Well, with drunks, I sort of get that about drunks. And of course, Connor had a severe alcohol problem. Threw a bus window and got charged in people's eyes and this and that. Of course, he didn't go to jail for that. Anybody else would have went to jail for it, but not Conor McGregor, because Dana White took care of that and decided he was going to do some business with the people in New York City. So, you know, we'll do some business with you if you look the other way on this one and just let him settle it civilly. So he did settle it civilly. But since that point in time, since he beat Jose Aldo like 4 or 5 years ago, he's like 3-5. He's 3-5, so it's not like he's winning these fights. For the most part, he's losing these fights. He's a loser. He's a drunk. Look at him. As I said, you dry out 4 to 6 weeks, you come down, and you're convincing yourself. You say, yeah, you know, I really want to drink, but I can lay off for a couple of weeks, or I can only have a beer here and there or something like that. I don't think he cut out the alcohol 100%. I just don't think so, because he thinks he's an alcoholic. I would bet my life on the fact that Conor McGregor is an alcoholic. I mean, from all the telltale symptoms, he is a drunk. And, of course, getting his own booze brand, that $200 million he made off that Conor McGregor whiskey, that Irish whiskey last year, more power to him in the money department. But as far as an athlete's concerned, I think it's time to stick a fork in Conor McGregor. He is done. As far as the heavyweight's concerned, this interim heavyweight title fight next week, I think it's going to be Derek Lewis against a guy that's undefeated, 13-0. But, you know, when you look at the current heavyweight champion, you say to yourself, Francis Ngannou, why is not he in action? The most exciting fighter on the planet as far as the UFC is concerned. But he wants to get paid. And Uncle Dana don't want to pay him. Dana the pimp don't want to pay him. So if Dana doesn't want to pay you, he sort of screws you over. I mean, an interim heavyweight title. Imagine this. When I was Golden Glove champion, if somebody said to me, hey, you know what? We're going to hold a little tournament in here in between your Golden Glove runs here and for another, what? Say what? No. You wait until the next tournament and before you can like take the Golden Glove title away from me. But not in this world. Bottom line is the world's unfair. And of course, Francis Ngannou, I think he's a monster. I think he's a beast. And I think that he is the true crossover star from the UFC to the world of boxing. If he gets away from Dana White, he stays with Dana White, just another hoe. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA. Coming up next, the doctor himself, our own house doctor, talk about Dr. Netan Sethi, of course, the chief physician for the New York State Athletic Commission, talking about mandatory ages when it comes to combat sports. Next up on Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV. Hey, but what this? Tom Bowes on lead for Tower of Power to the break.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC. A straight A student, all the girls were after me. I was even the captain of the football team. How could this happen? How could this happen to me?
Hardly the reason I try. Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Thank y'all for tuning in. All the fans around the world, we love y'all.
25, make it 26 minutes past the hour. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV, brought to you in part by the World Boxing Council. You can always check out their interactive website. They've got everything going on there, from diets to training tips. I'm talking about WBCBoxing.com. On the line from the East Coast, of course, is the head doctor of the New York State Athletic Commission, Dr. Netan Sethi. How are you today, sir?
I'm good, Pedro. How are you?
I am excellent, and I'm always looking forward to talking to you. Of course, you shot me an article you recently wrote in the past couple of weeks. Should there be a mandatory age for retirement in boxing? Tell me how you researched that, and what did you come up with?
Sure, Pedro. I was thinking that most boxers, you know, who turn pro, they do so in the early 20s. And as you know, they probably have a career which spans about 10 to 15 years, maybe till the mid-30s. But now, as we have seen, more and more professional boxers are boxing into the later years. And I think that's driven predominantly by economic factors. You know, they want to get the money, they want to make money, they want to have a living for themselves and their families. And also, as you know, there's been a tandem increase in boxers who are in their mid-40s, you know, sometimes late 40s, early 50s, who are coming out of their retirement to compete again in bouts, which are marketed as exhibition matches.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, when these aging boxers, when they enter the ring, obviously they are potentially placing their health at risk. And the impetus to write that article was, how can we make some safeguards to protect these aging boxers, which will allow some of them to continue to box safely. You know, a lot of them have a lot of experience. They enrich our sport. Fans love them. They all have some really amazing skills and boxing wisdom, which is comes out of years of experience. But how can we do it safely? How can we protect them as these aging fighters again enter the ring?
Good question. How do you do that? And should there, but every individual is different. I mean, you know, how can I put this? I could compete. I'm in my 60s now, but I thought I could compete with guys my age or guys a few years younger than me. Still to this day, I run that kind of good stuff. I keep myself in shape. But for the most part, guys, when they tend to retire from boxing, sort of let themselves go. So when they come back, they're not really what they were at one point in time. And, you know, I just think that, I just don't know where you can draw the line, Doc. And that's why this article that you wrote about mandatory ages for retirement in boxing, I thought that's where it sort of made a lot of sense. That's why I wanted you to come on. Cause I'm just totally perplexed on it.
You raise a very good point, Pedro. You know, I'm now 47. You know, I've been boxing. If I look at my video when I was, when I was working the bag, when I was in my 20s, and now when I work the bag and I'm in my 40s, you know, maybe I'm hitting the bag much more accurately. Maybe my technique is better, but my hand speed is definitely slow. So, you know, there's obviously an age-related decline in skills such as hand speed, footwork, durability, hand-eye coordination, flexibility. And you can make the argument that boxers now more prone to concussion, more prone to traumatic brain injury, more prone to injuries in general, you know, like orthopedic injuries, rotator cuff tear, you know, hand injuries. So, but also, like you said, you know, this is not, if you try to identify a fighter just based on age, That's neither error-free nor scientific. We can look at Manny Pacquiao. You know, he defies age. So professional boxers are elite athletes. You know, they have been doing demanding physical training. So they can mask some of their underlying physical vulnerabilities. So you may have a boxer who enters the ring, you know, you're masking that decline which has occurred. And, you know, he or she may be a vulnerable fighter entering the ring.
Okay, but then things happen. Of course, age is crazy. You know, when you look at the fact that, like I said, Foreman was able to come back in his 40s and capture the World Heavyweight Championship, that was like a 1 in a million shot. Now you've got guys that have been knocked out. And here's what my question to you is. Where do you draw the line on knockouts and severity of knockouts? I mean, do we consider each time a person's concussed a knockout? Or, I mean, how do you sort of add that up? And if a guy's been knocked out a certain amount of times, like, you know, I think about some of these football players, like Steve Young, who was with the 49ers at one point in time. He retired because he had too many concussions. He knew when to say goodbye, but boxers, they don't.
And that's another good point that, you know, how do you identify that vulnerable boxer who himself, you know, he himself may lack insight of his decline? You know, everybody thinks age cannot touch me. I'm the same man I was 20. You know, but the boxer may lack insight of his decline. He may exercise, in retrospective, poor judgment by coming into the ring again, accepting another fight. And how do you make sure that you identify that fighter and provide him with the resources he or she needs, one, to protect their brain health, their heart health, and, you know, if they can fight, to allow them to fight. The idea of writing the article is not that there should be a mandatory retirement age. That's not going to go down well with any boxer. They would refuse to accept having a mandatory retirement age. No boxer, no promoter will allow that. And I can understand that. You know, we all, you know, it's in the end, you're fighting to make a living for yourself, for your family. Boxers fight not just for making money. They fight for fame, for glory, for their own self-esteem. As you probably know, when a lot of them retire, they take it pretty hard. You know, they become depressed, anxiety. Some of them fall prey to alcohol. So what I was trying to basically say was that maybe doing more episodic, more detailed medical evaluation of boxers after a certain age, let's say we put the age as 40, when we know that the incidence of decline occurs in physical attributes, that might be more appropriate, and that might include doing a more detailed neurological examination, maybe more MRIs, MRAs, a more good cardiac evaluation. And then based on that, you know, you try to identify fighters who need careful attention, mm-hmm. and you say probably, you know, listen, I don't think it's a good idea for you to fight. And the ones you feel, they're fine, they can fight, you know, their skills are maintained, they are very good at what they're doing. No concerns are raised. And that's the reason why I kind of wrote this commentary, to make us think in that way.
Okay. But this is a sport where the young eats the old. That's the way it's done.
True. Young eats the old, and there is no substitute. You know, age is not just a number in boxing. I gave you my own example. So I think, you know, the message which goes out is that when boxers are aging, they need to exercise good judgment. You know, you are more vulnerable to injuries, and you may enter that one fight where, for some reason, you may never come back, especially if you're accepting fights against younger, more stronger opponents. You might be able to match them when you were in your prime, but, you know, when you're in mid-40s, late 50s, late 40s, early 50s, it's a different ballgame.
I stretch in the bathtub each morning. I sort of do bathtub yoga because I've got some back issues and this and that. But a doctor told me when I was boxing one time, I was a kid, he goes, I didn't stretch. I just went out there and fought. I was like 13 years old. You didn't stretch at 13. Just went out there and did it. Anyway, he goes, you need to stretch. Anyway, bottom line was, I saw him about 10 or 15 years ago, and he told me that, you know, now that I've aged, that elasticity, the ability to stretch, is going to be more important than upper body strength as you age. Is that true?
I agree. You are more prone to pulling your muscles, having some sort of orthopedic injury like a tear off your rotator cuff if you're not stretching as you get older. So, you know, like I said, when I look at my videos, I feel my technique is more better, my punches are more on target, but I'm slow. I'm slow from what I was, and I think I hit the back less hard than as I used to hit when I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing is, the age is not a number when it comes to boxing, and you're right, it's a sport of the young. But, you know, we don't want to deny anybody, a boxer, to earn his or her living, you know, provided we can do it safely. And I think that's where I think the commissions, WBC, other organizations need to come up to develop some guidelines, and these are self-regulatory guidelines. Nobody wants to impose mandatory retirement age, just self-regulatory guidelines designed to protect the health of these older fighters, because I think we are going to see more and more of older fighters entering the ring and the cage.
Interesting. Now, real quick before I let you go, that article you did on mandatory retirement, or question mark, is that published somewhere?
No, I'm in the process of publishing it. I've not published it yet. I just send it to you because I value your thoughts. But yeah, no, it's not published yet.
Well, when you do, get it to me. I love you, Doc. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Pedro. You have a good weekend.
Dr. Netan Sethi, the lead doctor for the New York State Athletic Commission. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV. We're sort of featuring the voice of Tom Bose today, the lone Caucasian lead singer for Tower of Power. Had a lot of black dudes, but Tommy was bad.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
Let's do it. Anybody who wants to fight, let's go.
some Tower of Power, make this like 2007, something like that. Anyway, bottom line is, they did this song with a lead singer by the name of Larry Braggs, and I discovered Larry Braggs singing for Executive Suite. Of course, he was my buddy Jose threw this band together, and Executive Suite had Larry Braggs on lead. So Tower of Power is looking for a lead singer. Jeff Tamalea says to me, you know, we're looking for a lead singer. I said, you might want to check out this guy, Larry Braggs. Anyway, like, he may let, we'll use him for a little bit. That's the way Doc Cooper said, the co-leader of Bound Tower of Power. He said, we'll use him for a little bit, but he's like a lounge singer. We're going to get rid of him and look for somebody else. He lasted 12 years. And of course, then he became the lead singer of the Temptations. So he's done his thing. No doubt about that. Great Larry Braggs. But Larry, you never gave me that money for the referral. Bottom line is, I want to talk a little tragedy for a second. Of course, somebody said to me the other day, remember Greg Page? And I was looking at this and somebody shot me something as far as the text was concerned here. The text chat was concerned. On Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel, and it says something to the expect, well, I guess Greg Page was taken to the emergency room of St. Luke's Hospital, where a CAT scan revealed a huge mass being formed by the bleeding inside his head. He was then transported to University Hospital in Cincinnati. During his post-fight brain surgery, he suffered a stroke and was left paralyzed on the left side of his body. Page was in a coma for nearly a week. And then, in 2004, I believe, I think it was 2004, I think we were in Bridgeport, I think it was Bridgeport or Newport, Illinois, somewhere like that. It was north of Chicago. We were doing this benefit. Jerry Cooney and myself. Jerry was good. Jerry's a good guy, man. Jerry's a good guy. Anyway, Jerry Cooney and myself, we're doing this fundraiser for Gerald McClellan, of course, the WBC super middleweight champion that got destroyed. His life was destroyed in that fight with Nigel Benn. Of course, that's when he knocked Nigel Benn out of the ring in the first round, knocked him into the first or second row. And then they let him come back and continue to fight. I mean, the guy was like, 10 count, like 5 times. Anyway, bottom line is, Nigel Benn comes back. He beats up on Gerald McClellan. Gerald gets tired. Of course, Gerald was straining to make weight. When you strain to make weight the way Gerald does, and Gerald was cutting off everything for the last week and a half, but when you strain to make weight, it takes away the fluid in your brain. And that's what you need for your brain to bounce around, for that fluid to be there. Anyway, the fluid wasn't there. He was, basically blinded from this fight. Of course, the referee let it go, and oh God, it was a terrible fight to go on. Anyway, bottom line is, it ended the career of Gerald McClellan, almost his life. If not for his sister Lisa, he would probably be a dead man. And I watched Gerald McClellan. He's a moody guy. I mean, he can't see, and it's a rough, life is rough for him, but yet his sister sees him through all of this. And I mean, he's thrown fits, he's thrown violent rages and this kind of stuff, and she just hangs with him. So Lisa McClellan, I want to give her props. Anyway, Greg Page was died at the age of 50, and when he died in 2009, he died a broken guy, and boxing broke him. The fact that he fought in that Louisville, Kentucky, of course, he was from Kentucky originally, but he fought in this fight in Louisville, Kentucky. It was his last fight, and what happened was they didn't put a pad on the ring. He fought Dale Crow in 2001, but they didn't put a pad on the ring. In other words, there was no pad on the ring. There was a metal plate, and that was it. There was a pad in the middle of the ring, where the canvas was, but not on the edge. So when he got knocked out of the ring, he hit his head on the side of the edge of the ring platform, and that was all steel. So from that point forward, I mean, he was, toast. There's no doubt about it. The fact he was paralyzed after that stroke, when I got together and did that fundraiser for him, and I can't think of Bridgeport, Illinois. Anyway, bottom line was, he was in a wheelchair and he was still trying to crack jokes. He always used to crack jokes around me. I trained around him in Johnny Taco's gym in the 80s and in Las Vegas, Nevada, and he was always a trickster. He was always doing something. I mean, like, you'd fill up your water bottle, your water would be full, this and that, and then you'd be sparring a couple of rounds in this or working out a couple of rounds in the bag and go back, and your water bottle was empty. And you say to yourself, I just filled this up. And he's over in the corner watching, chuckling this one. He was somewhat childish, but he liked to pull pranks, no doubt about that. At the end of the day, he died at the age of 50 years old, of course, from the residual effects of that fall, that day, no doubt about that, in 2001, of course, in Louisville, Kentucky. It was in Erlanger, Kentucky, which is just outside of Louisville, Kentucky. Anyway, there was a lawsuit involved. I don't think he got nearly enough money because he sort of died somewhat broke. Anyway, 58-17 was his eventual record. 48 KOs. He was stopped 6 times. A former WBC champion at one point in time. He really had it going on. And of course, he sort of like, guys get, I call it the Don King syndrome. Hey, Don, sorry. But the bottom line is, I call it the Don King syndrome. You get signed to a contract with Don King, and for some reason, you get fat and lazy. You just do. Tony Tubbs, I can go on and on. Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson. Even Mike Tyson got soft a little bit, okay? Everybody seems to get soft a little after they sign these exclusive long-term contracts with Don King, especially heavyweights. This is the way it is. At the end of the day, though, the wire-haired wonder, we could probably use him in the world of boxing right now. Of course, boxing sort of like a, I don't want to say it's a rudderless ship, but, you know, Barry Hearn, the guy that runs DAZN, the Matchroom boxing promoter out of the UK, he's basically the premier boxing, the premier promoter in the world of boxing. Of course, there's still Bob Arum and his top-ranked team. Of course, they got the ESPN deals, and they've got all kinds of good fights going on. They have Vasyl Lomachenko, and they had the world lightweight champion, Teofimo Lopez, until they lost a purse bid to, these Triller guys who came up with like almost $6 million. I mean, Bob Arum and those guys were only bidding $2.4 million. So Teofimo, had he fought under Arum's money, he'd have made like $1 million, $1.5 million at the max, okay? Now, if he fights with these other guys, he's making almost $4 million. So the bottom line is, Arum's a little upset about that, the fact that there are people coming in and sort of poaching his talent. But, you know, he still made, like Arum was bragging, it was the easiest $725,000 I ever made in my life. Well, more power too. You made $725,000, but guess what? You're not promoting the world lightweight champion. Somebody else is. Shame on you. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, we come to you 3 hours a week live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, and most importantly, Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. That's right. The live stream comes to you both live and delayed at Sports Byline. Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. Of course, you've got the live shows, you've got the delayed shows. They got it going on. Darren breaks his show down into two different hours and excludes the news when he puts us up as far as the final drafts are concerned, as far as the Twitch.tv final drafts are concerned. And they'll be up probably about 9 o'clock Pacific time tonight. So if you want to come back at that point in time, both these shows will be edited and up at that point in time on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. So Greg Page, that was a little bit sad, you know, and look at all the guys that he fought down the stretch, the guys that they just fed him to, although he beat Tim Witherspoon back in 1999. But in the year 1999, he took on a guy that was a monster. This guy beat Riddick Bowe. This guy beat Lennox Lewis. I mean, this guy, I said to myself, man, this guy can really, this guy's a, he's 6'7". Remember, he was a big guy. I'm talking about Jorge Luis Gonzalez. Couldn't lick a stamp if he wet his tongue. I'm serious. If you use the right strategy, he could be beat. If you let him come to you and just like, you know, use his physical mass to overwhelm you, then you were going to get licked. But the bottom line is, if you had half a boxing brain, you were going to beat this guy. But he was 6'7". He had absolutely no, can I use that BALLS word on the air? He had no intestinal fortitude, or BALLS, one or the other. Call it what you want. But the bottom line is, I remember when he fought guys like, he lost to Joe Mason, he lost to Cliff Cowser. Cliff Cowser was Mike Tyson lookalike. Anyway, he lost to Derek Bryant, you know, but Greg Page beat him. And when I was looking down in his career, the guy that he fought, and sort of, I was surprised that he didn't become heavyweight champion. This is one surprise I had in the last 15 years, a guy that didn't become champion, a guy that was a monster. And that was Michael Grant. Of course, Michael Grant stood 6'7", and Michael Grant, I thought he could really fight, but he could, but he couldn't take. It was another guy. See, it's a big thing. That's why, for the most part, when you get into street fights, you know, when I was a kid and I was young, I used to get into street fights with guys who were much bigger than me. And even as a cop, I would get into fights with guys. You can't, because when you're a cop, you can't pick who you're going to fight. So, yeah, I'm going to pick this guy. No. He's picking you. Those guys pick you. It's not you have a choice. So anyway, when I used to rumble with the bigger guys, and of course, and it happened, especially out there in the Hunters Point area, I would just hold on. In other words, I'd hold on for like 45 seconds and hope that they wouldn't kill me in the first 45 seconds. At that point in time, they were gassed and you took advantage of them and it was all over. But the bottom line is, Michael Grant, 6'7". I said to myself, I watched him train. I said to myself, this guy's a killer. He's a monster. He couldn't handle getting hit on the chin. He just couldn't get, I mean, Mike Tyson says everybody is a tough guy till you get hit in the jaw. Yeah, that's the way it was with Michael Grant. So Michael Grant was my biggest disappointment, no doubt about that. Of course, he lost to Lennox Lewis, and then he lost to another big disappointment I had in Jameel McClain. Jameel McClain was a good guy coming to us out of Brooklyn. Was it Brooklyn? No, I think he was fighting out of Harlem. Anyway, he was born in Harlem. But the bottom line is, he had a nice-looking wife, and he was a smarter guy than the average boxer. Ended up at 41-13. But the bottom line is, Jameel McClain was another guy. I mean, they put him in a fight with Evander Holyfield, and he didn't show up. He just, I mean, what was the story in it? I never understood this. When you're on the spot, When you're fighting for the World Heavyweight Championship, when it's all about the title and you succeeding, why is it you don't get on when you're fighting Klitschko? Why is it you just don't get it on and perform your very best? I don't get it. Why can you leave it in the studio? Or why can you leave it at home? Never understood that. I remember one time they used to tell me, Chris Gomez used to tell me, look, you're losing this fight. He used to always say that. I was winning most of these fights. Okay? But he would tell me, he'd look around like this, you're losing this fight. And, you know, half the time I believe him, half the time I wouldn't, because I know what's going on in front of me. When he's like, you're losing this fight. We need you to go out there and just give it your all, Pete. Just give it your all. If you need to be carried out of here, I will carry you out. But please go out there and give 300% for me in this round. Okay. Bit of a con man there for the corner man, no doubt about that. But he got his point across. And I went out there and I did it in that last round like you wouldn't imagine. It was, the incentive was there. I mean, the drive was there. The wanted, the desire to win, to be victorious. Listen, that transcended above anything else. I mean, people say, yeah, did you like participating in boxing? No, I didn't like participating in boxing. I like winning in boxing. And people say to me, you look at your record, how many bums did you fight, Pedro? A lot. I did. I admit, I fought a lot. I wouldn't call them bums. I would call them guys that had a lot less skill than I. And of course, we did every once in a while. How can I put this? You roll over a guy that you probably shouldn't be fighting. And why that happened? Because, you know, you go to a card and like they say, guess what? We need somebody to fill in a fight here. And, you know, and I'm like laying around. I've been training, but I'm not ready to fight per se. And then they con you in the fight and the promoter cons you in the fight. Come on, Pedro. You're the Golden Glove champion. You're ranked nationally, blah, blah, this kind of stuff. So Otis Grimble con me in the fight. And I think I fought about 8 or 10 times like that where I showed up and like, I will always have my trunks in the trunk, though, in the car. Anyway, I always show up for these amateur cards, not knowing whether I was going to fight, not intending to fight, but you end up fighting anyway. And those, he'd say, oh, we'll make it an exhibition. And then all of a sudden you look across the ring and this ain't no exhibition. This guy's here to fight. This is for real. No doubt about that. May he rest in peace. Talk about Otis Grimble. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, boxing is a mental sport more than it is physical. Did I run 6-7 days a week sometimes? Did I run twice a day? Did I also do the pool for the cardio? Did I run up mountains in the sand? Yeah, I did. But guess what? None of that mattered unless I was mentally together. And how do you get mentally together in boxing? How do you put the whole thing together? How does it come together? If you're physically at your best, this is what Alexis Arguello told me in 1982, because I had lost a controversial decision in the only Golden Glove Championship fight I ever lost in my life to Mike Christie down there in San Jose. They took away 2 points. Marty Salmon took away 2 points, because I was a little bit rough. Anyway, he took away 2 points, which I thought was a little out of line. Anyway, he took away 2 points. I lost a 3-2 split decision. In other words, at the end of 3 rounds, it was even. They didn't know what to do, so they called, you know, they flipped a coin and gave Mike Christie the fight. So anyway, I learned from that, and that made me the most determined man in the entire world. So when I came up on my next Golden Glove Championship, in other words, I had to get through somebody in order to get to that second championship fight. When I got that second championship fight, I made sure I didn't lose, and I never lost a championship fight from that point forward. 4-1 in Golden Glove Championship fights. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. You're inside looking at the world of boxing, MMA. Often imitated, but as you can see, never duplicated. You think you cold, cold to be home, but the truth be told, you about to throw both the dogs up.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Most of you know when I play taps, it means that somebody I know has passed away. And, of course, anytime there's death, words can never suffice when it comes to death, no doubt about that. But Issa Linares went in for a common hysterectomy in this past week, and she passed away. And, of course, she is family to Virginia Linares, Nestor, Jasmine, Dominique, Isaac, Noah, Sophia. Anyway, they are blown away by, you know, when a member of the family, somebody that carries you, almost like the matriarch, carries you through hard times, through the pandemic, through illness, through this and that. And then, of course, they pass on, they get ill and they pass on. It's always tough. But the bottom line is, Issa, may you rest in peace. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. You're inside. Look at the world of boxing, MMA, Michael Hunter versus Mike Wilson next week, August the 3rd. Take that back Tuesday, August the 3rd. Of course, that's going to be on Fightin' Trilla pay-per-view. Oh, boy, I'm going to want to buy that, right? And probably not. Anyway, Mike Hunter versus Mike Wilson. Mike Hunter is the son of Mike the Bounty Hunter. Of course, that was the guy I went to China with, and I televised a couple of those fights when I was working for the Z Channel down there in Irvine, California. He is the most unpredictable dude you have ever met in your life. I'm telling you, I'm talking about Mike Hunter, Mike the Bounty Hunter Sr. This is Mike the Bounty Hunter Jr. He's taking on Mike Wilson. This is a heavyweight eliminator, so supposedly. A super bantamweight bout going to go down the 27th, I take it by August the 6th, Friday night. That's going to be on ESPN, Michael Conlon versus TJ Doheny, and of course, the 7th, Keith Galahad, nice name, Keith Galahad versus Jazza Dickens for the vacant IBF featherweight title, of course, coming up on the, wow, how about the big fight? You know, that's what we're talking about. Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao is going to roll with Errol Spence August the 21st. Of course, a lot of people don't give Manny Pacquiao much of a chance. On paper, Manny Pacquiao should have no chance. He should get smoked like a blunt. I kid you not, this shouldn't even be close. Shouldn't be competitive. Shouldn't even happen. The guy's 42 years old. He's coming up like 5 or 6 weight classes. He shouldn't be able to be competitive with Earl Spence. But yet, there are people I know, experts I know, picking Manny Pacquiao. What does that mean? It means a fight you're probably going to want to watch August the 21st on pay-per-view. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. You're inside looking to the world of boxing, MMA. Want to thank my viewers on Twitch.tv, the Sports File on USA channel, both live and delayed. Want to thank you for your questions, your input, and your input. Want to thank everybody that texted me during the show today. I got back to you from most of those texts, I think, during the show. Bottom line is, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, often imitated but never duplicated. 24/7, of course, at sportsbyline.com, 24/7 at Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USC channel, iHeartRadio, I can go on and on. The bottom line is, until next time, don't forget, Ring Talk comes to you live Saturday and Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific time, right here on sportsbyline.com. Until then, peace, love, and a ton of respect.